welcome to the Digital CXO podcast. I'm Amanda Rizzani, and with me again today is Mike Bizzard. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Good to see you.
Wonderful. Well, we have a lot of news in the digital transformation world, and we're going to start with SMA Technologies. Mike, can you share a little bit more?
Well, they have a survey that they did, and it was really focused on how much are people spending on IT automation and what kind of benefits are they seeing from that? And most folks are spending north of $100,000, but it's not clear that they're all getting that amount back. And I mean, it takes a while for these things to play out over the course of a year, but it's an interesting time for IT automation frameworks, right? We have all these islands of IT automation, and we have now the rise of Gen AI. And I think a lot of folks are trying to figure out, well, what is the right level of investment in these IT automation frameworks going forward, because I can increasingly connect a bunch of prompts together and maybe create a prompt library to automate a series of tasks. And I may have to know a little bit about prompt engineering, but I don't have to spend a fortune on an IT automation framework to go do that per se, so long as I can expose the right data in a way that is consistent and kind of create some sort of flow around that whole process. And I think a lot of digital transformation officers right now are trying to figure out basically one of three things. To what degree can I just rely on the native prompts and the LLMs that I'm being exposed with today to automate something? Secondarily is, how much can I just use those prompts in the future to invoke the IT automation framework itself without having to know any magical programming languages or any special capabilities? And then the third is, well, is all this Gen AI stuff going to replace the need for those IT automation frameworks altogether, or is there going to be more specialized use cases? And there's a range of factors that go into that decision. My immediate sense of things is, more things are going to be automated than ever because more people will be daisy chaining prompts together. And exactly how that plays out on the IT automation frameworks, I am not sure. We have, and I'm including in that all the stuff around robotic process automation that's out there and web workload automation. There's all kinds of stuff that's out there. And it's, so I loosely bundle all this together as IT automation frameworks, but it's an interesting time because no one's quite sure, or at least from my perspective, how this is going to play out just yet. But if I'm a digital CXO, I have to wonder if I'm going to be a little hesitant for the next 3 or 4 months before I make a bet on something one way or the other.
Yeah, and you have to think, you know, sometimes you have to be strategic in what you're going to automate, because I'm sure if we sat here and we made a list, almost anything could potentially be automated. But, you know, some things are more important that they are automated than others. So, you know, thinking strategically, especially when it comes to that return on investment, does this really need to be automated, or should we really, you know, step back, look at the overall picture and figure out, you know, what really should we focus on first as far as automation? And then, you know, how can we utilize AI with that as well?
You and I live that daily. There's plenty of things that, as part of editorial operations here, we'd love to automate, but we share a centralized resource with the rest of the company, and there's only maybe one or two people working on automation, so they get to us when they can get to us, and it's just part of life. I'm sure we all see the same things, but I think your point is spot on. Prioritizing your efforts is more important than ever, and a lot of times, though, you may just want to point people to a prop library and tell them to have at it.
Yeah, and sometimes automation can go overboard to the point of it actually being a problem and more of a nuisance when it's over-automated.
And, you know, you bring up a great point, because there's a lot of processes that, frankly, have more exceptions than rules, and that's necessary because it's been determined over the years that there are just all these one-off use cases that need to be addressed. So sometimes a process doesn't easily lend itself to being automated. And of course, the folks who are advocates for automation are always like, yep, we can automate everything. But then, you know, you run into all these different isolated use cases where some customers get annoyed because the automation is just far too constricted.
Absolutely. Well, moving on now, we're going to talk about something I feel we talk about pretty regularly, which is the importance of data. And I recently had a great conversation with Andy McMillan of User Testing, and then the CTO and the CEO of Crikey, which is a gaming company. And it was very interesting about how they utilized user testing to kind of better understand what users want by running them through, you know, actually studying how they're using software, how they're using different tools, and then taking that data to better understand what products they should really put out there, or how they can change up their products to improve their customer and user experience. So we're of course, we know that that's very important. And data, the more you can have it and the more you can harness that data, is the backbone of every company. But what are you hearing from business leaders?
I think it directly relates to what we were just talking about. The issue with automation is we don't have enough insight into what the actual end customer wants. So there's a tendency to automate from the perspective of the employees and the managers and what their quote unquote desired outcome is, because a lot of times, you know, we've talked about this before, but you feel like somebody just pushed a data entry task out from themselves to somebody else who's a customer, and the customer goes, this is not a better experience, doesn't help me get a more customized offering, it doesn't really even speed things up for me, it makes it harder because all that stuff that you used to do on your side, you're now sending over a form to me to handle, and that's not a lot of fun. And so people will go shop somewhere else. I think a lot of that has to do with we don't test enough about how people are using software or how that process has impacted them, and sometimes we don't even want to know because we are deliberately trying to push the process out to them, and we have a hidden agenda, but you know, at the end of the day, they get wise to it, and then they start complaining, and you start seeing your customer's satisfaction scores start to decline simply because, you know, somebody automated something in a way that turns out the customer hates.
Yeah, and you know, more and more is online, and there's more tools and software and platforms that customers are using, and they're coming to expect a lot more. You know, they're a lot more particular, and their expectations are a lot higher, especially as more and more tools, you know, come to light, like AI especially. So definitely understanding what the customer's needs are is only going to be really achieved through more data.
Yeah, and folks, someday they want mass customization. Everybody wants a process that's tuned to them.
Yes. So moving past this, we're going to talk a little bit more about this subject. There's an article on Digital CXO called Moving Past the Hype Around AI for CX and Automation, what we were just speaking of. And there was one of the Forrester analysts was sharing on a recent Forrester podcast that companies really need to step back and be careful when it comes to just trying to implement this AI and really look at the overall picture. What is the use case that they need? What is the solution that they're looking for? And not just start harnessing AI for the sake of it and for the sake of automation or for customer experience, without really understanding the repercussions, because then you have things like Air Canada when they let loose their chatbot and then they got in trouble because the chatbot just generated false information to the customer, and then they faced a lawsuit and they were blaming the chatbot when ultimately it's their tool. It's just a technology, and they can't blame a technology or sue a technology. So this is going to become an issue when you try to let AI loose like that without any kind of oversight. They really need to be careful. So what are your thoughts?
I think a lot of this just comes down to what you just said, understanding how it works. So all these generative AI platforms are probabilistic. That means that as far as the machine can tell, based on the data that it's been exposed to, that this answer is the right answer. Now, what makes it challenging is the machine will present that in a very convincing fashion. So you, as the person looking at that, say, well, the machine seems absolutely sure. Well, it turns out that that is not a deterministic answer. So it's basically taking its best guess. And the funny thing will happen. If you ask the same question four or five times over, you'll get slightly different answers each time. So that kind of tells you that the machine is continuing to guess. And you got to be real careful if your customer experience is supposed to be the same 100% of the time and suddenly you're automating something with Gen AI. Yeah, chances are it may not work out the way you think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, moving on, I get so excited when we talk about things like this. Robots. We're going to discuss some new robots. So Boston Dynamics recently unveiled some new features to their robot Atlas. And on another industry, Mercedes and Aptronix unveiled the Apollo robot. So these are both robots that are going to help in the manufacturing sectors and, you know, help with automating a lot of the that process. And we're seeing a lot more robots. I feel like a lot more humanoid robots with the AI intelligence. And I'm excited to see what the future of robots looks like with combining AI into this level.
I kind of like the whole idea. And when you combine robotics and humanoid hands and Gen AI, it's going to be an exciting new world, no doubt. It's just as scary, too. And there's a couple issues that come to mind. It's like, so it has a humanoid shape. It can do a lot of things, right? And it may do things that you didn't expect. So it's not clear to me that I'm quite going to be comfortable with, I don't know, having a humanoid robot take care of my dog, because maybe the robot will decide to hallucinate and something bad will happen to my dog. So, you know, you can start extrapolating out other scenarios that could go equally wrong. And, you know, bearing in page 42 of a user license agreement that you're not responsible for whatever just happened to my dog because of your robot, I don't think that's going to cover it. But that said, this stuff is coming. I mean, folks in China are going to be pumping out these humanoid robotic platforms by the millions. And I'm not quite clear where the cost point's going to be just yet, but eventually we're going to get that down to something that people can reasonably afford. So maybe everyone will have one in their house. I don't know. But we're on the cusp of something dramatic here. I think you saw where Boston Dynamics is getting rid of their old robots that kind of look like, you know, daisy chain parts together. They were kind of very mechanical looking in favor of a more humanoid approach. So I don't know. Do we name these things? I mean, am I going to call them Bob and Susan and Carol or what?
Well, most of these companies are naming these robots, but as you said, price is going to be the real issue right now. The only place that they make sense is in big enterprise, I think. But, you know, down the road, just like with anything, cell phones and computers and everything else, I'm sure eventually down maybe, say, 10 years from now, we might all have some form of this kind of robot in our households.
You were just dealing with some issues before this call that you probably would have just as soon as sent the humanoid robot out there for.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice if I could have a humanoid robot go paint my house? That would be great. Well, moving on. Now we're going to talk about augmented reality. And Meta just recently announced that they have joined forces with the AR Alliance as founding members. And I think this is great because there's so many neat things you can do with augmented reality and virtual reality. And I think it's just the tip of the iceberg in this area. And, you know, business leaders are looking, how can they harness it for better customer experiences and remote work experiences and various other use cases for it. So what are you hearing?
I think that there's a split coming, or maybe it's a merger. I'm not quite clear, but clearly there's augmented reality for consumers and gaming and whatever else. And then there's augmented reality for business, which to me still feels like a digital twin, right? That's just something I can interact with maybe a little more deeply because I'm using some hollow glasses or whatever Apple's building to engage with that. But I wonder if this is going to be a space onto itself, or if it's all about to converge with AI, Gen AI, and for that matter, robots.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how we blend all these, you know, technologies together for a really amazing experience in a variety of industries, personally and professionally.
All right. If that does come to be the case, though, and we are dealing with augmented reality and robots and everything else, you know, by all means, we got to start dusting off our copies of various Asimov novels and other folks about, you know, do no harm with the robots. So,
yes, well, I think we're a bit of a ways from all that, but it's very exciting to see this future unfold. And I think that brings us to the end of our list, Mike. So any key thoughts before we end today's podcast?
I think it's never been a better time to be in charge of digital transformation. There's more emerging tech and more new cool things to do. The challenge is always going to be like picking which ones to use first and which ones are ready to cross that proverbial chasm to the point where people can actually use it. Because as everybody who's been a digital CXO knows, the only thing worse than doing nothing is sometimes just being too early.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, our audience, for tuning in again with us today. And stay tuned for next week. Have a great rest of your week.
Hey, guys.